Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors in the country about their investment journeys. We look at their first investments and how their investment strategies have changed over the years. We also take a peek at their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to identify a few nuggets of wisdom to help young amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Lebo Tubisi. Now, he's the Deputy Chief Investment Officer for Alternative Investments at Alex Forbes Investments. And he has been with Alex Forbes for a long time, longer than 13 years. Lebo, thank you so much for your time today. Before we delve into investments, first tell us a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up and what did you dream of when you were young?
Really, really appreciate the time, Rick. And yeah, so I was born in a very small town called Taung. I'm sure you've heard of the Taung Ska. Small little town, you know, that borders the Northern Cape and the Northwest. We were stationed there because my father's a medical professional and he was doing his community service there. And very mono-ethnic, Tswana-speaking sort of community. And we were there for about 5 years and then we moved to Pretoria, Mamelodi. I'm clearly a Sundowns supporter. My mom actually was born and grew up there, and very different community, you know, melting pot of different, you know, kind of people from different backgrounds and the likes. And so, you know, those things, you look at them now and they've kind of influenced one's, you know, sort of journey, you know, to be open-minded. And in fact, the story I always tell is whilst we were there, my folks were trying to figure out when they started to allow Black children to attend, you know, multiracial schools. They decided, you know, it's probably a good idea to send them to a semi-Orthodox Jewish school. And so present day Crawford Pretoria was a Jewish school, Carmel. And so I was there from standard one to standard four, and I'm using standard and I'm exposing my age here. We did prayers with everybody. We had Jewish studies. I learned Hebrew and the likes. And so, you know, I guess in hindsight, you look back and you look at some of the experiences there and they influence the way you view investments, you know, that you need to be open-minded about different experiences.
But did you always know you're going to be an investment professional? Or what careers did you consider when you had to make the tertiary decisions?
That's a good question. And so, as I said, my father's a medical doctor. And I remember, again, I think it must have been grade 10, then at 8, when I was speaking to him and said, look, Dad, I think I want to be a doctor. And he listened to my justifications and all of those things. And he gave me a very sobering view of the life of a medical doctor. And one of the things is the sacrifice that comes when it comes to family time, that you're always on call. And, you know, and he says it's just a job for people who, you know, you need to be sure that this is, you have a passion for this. And he said, but you're great at numbers, you know, you're good with people. And, you know, why don't you think about something financial? And that actually set me down a path. And look, one was fortunate that the school that I attended had, you know, sort of these career days. And somebody actually, in fact, came and said, you know, they did actuarial science and the likes. And so, and that really, you know, set me down a path. And so my path to finance, in fact, wasn't straight. And so I studied actuarial science at university until my third year. Then I realized I'm chasing my sister's dream, you know, and I think very quickly then at the time, somebody said, well, why don't you consider finance? And so I switched, added an extra year to my studies, but I don't regret it at all. And even then during university, you know, we were playing, you know, sort of the stock exchange challenge on campus. And in fact, we won it the 1 year. And I think that's really what set me down the path of, you know, just broadening my horizons, that the world out there is actually very broad.
Yeah, the stock market challenge. I also participated many, many years ago, probably before you, actually a long time before you. And it does create excitement. The moment you make investments and In those days, you had to get the newspaper to get the share price, the closing share price of the previous day, and then it ignites discussions. And I think that's a very, very good way for young people to start, even when they're still at school, because it pricks the imagination of, you know, picking shares and go from 1 rand to 100 rand, because I would imagine that is the goal of every single professional investor and actually any investor.
And whether you do it with money or not, the process is the same. You know, you learn about different companies and how they're structured, how they make money, the risks that they face, and, you know, highly recommend it. And you're right. And so my father himself, in fact, whilst he's a medical doctor, he's well read. And so he used to, you know, invest his own personal capacity. I remember, I think it was the late 90s when interest rates hit, you know, kind of double digits, if you'll recall. And he was having a conversation with me at the time to say, look, you know, times are really tough, but, you know, you need to continuously kind of invest and find new opportunities. And so investments, there's an interesting quote by, you know, Warren Buffett, and we all know him being the father of value investing. You know, he said, you know, the essence of investment management is really about managing risk and less about managing returns. And so as a youngster, you need to cultivate that thinking around what is the risk that faces a mining company versus that of a bank. And you really test your teeth by doing some of these challenges. And I know there was a time, by the way, where FX trading was such a craze amongst the youngsters. And I do really encourage the young ones, regardless of what you're studying, that going in and testing your mettle at this will really edify one's growth when it comes to investing.
You said manage risk and don't manage return. That's an interesting strategy. Just elaborate exactly what you mean.
So, I mean, the company I work for, in fact, Alex Forbes Investments, we are what we call a multi-manager. And so we express our investment views through other asset managers, and you know the names that are out there. But the mantra of really what has given our success is managing the risk that a certain asset manager, through their performance cycle, they'll go through bad times. And so by blending the different managers together, so some managers believe in a value style, others believe in a growth style. And, you know, investment literature tells you that alpha, so outperformance, is cyclical. So if you're good at managing the risk that the value manager goes through periods of underperformance relative to the other, that actually you're able to blend them together. And so that is a risk management exercise. So if you manage your risks well, where you find uncorrelated performance of whether it's the stocks themselves or the managers, typically what you find that you protect your value, right? So when markets correct, that the value of what you've invested will then compound on a higher base. And, you know, compound interest has been said to be the eighth wonder of the world, right? And so if you minimize your downside, actually what happens over time, that it grows at a better pace. And so that risk management is as powerful as thinking about outperformance. So manage your risks, you'll see that the returns will effectively come through. And this is what we've seen through the portfolios that we manage on behalf of pension fund clients.
But how should a young individual who's just started his or her first job and who would like to start investing approach this strategy on managing risk rather than trying to identify shares that will go up or unit trusts that will perform well? How should they approach it?
The only way I can talk about it is through my experience. And so I entered the working world in 2006. You know, what I was advised at the time is form a stock fell. There's a fine two or three, if not more, people who are equally minded, who want to try out, contribute together into some collective account and invest together. And so then the risk you're managing is that you're not alone. You know, so there's power in numbers. You read as much as you can, you collectively invest. And so when we started, our first share, in fact, that we invested in was, at the time I'm talking 2008 now, was sort of Old Mutual. And if I remember correctly, the share itself was trading at around 7, 7.5. I can't remember very clearly, but it doubled very quickly. And the reason why we're in Old Mutual is my friend was an actuary. And so he had a better understanding what insurance companies behaved and those things. And so, and I contributed from a financial services perspective because I started my career at JP Morgan. And so I think the power of numbers is very good. So we opened a stockbroking account and, you know, we had formal meetings. But I think it's much easier today. There's platforms now where you have what they call fractional ownership. You know, you don't have to have a lot of money to invest. There are platforms now where you can invest passively. And so I think to encourage the youngsters is just get started. And if you want to get started, start with a few of you, because in my view, you know, there's power in collective thinking, as they call diversity in collective thinking.
Yeah, and as we've said earlier, the moment you do that, suddenly a whole new world opens up for you, a world of investments, which is not always only about money. It just broadens the world you live in. And it's important because the financial world and the investment world is critical in everybody's lives. Just what was your very first investment you made with money you have earned?
The very first investment that I made with money that I earned was actually, it wasn't even a listed investment. Is, as I said, I come from Mamelodi. And one of the things that I identified at the time is a lot of people cooked with paraffin. For them to kind of source paraffin, it was very difficult at times. And so I saved up a little bit of money, and my uncle had a Nissan Wantana, and I invested in a paraffin delivery vehicle, you know. So we went and got a company to retrofit a tank on top of the van. And effectively, we were delivering paraffin into the township communities. And we always felt that there was a need in that regard. And so I was fortunate that I grew up amongst people who were entrepreneurs at the time, and that you need to have a keen eye on basic needs. And that's how you tend to make investments. And so that was the first investment. But the first listed investment that I made was into Safaricom. I'm sure you're quite familiar with the business. I have a close friend of mine who's Kenyan, and he told me about that there's this telecoms company that is starting, and why can't we put money into it? And you know what Safaricom has done since then. And so we held it for a very long time. It was probably one of the first and probably the most successful investment I'd ever made.
And you still hold it today?
No. I don't. I wish I still did. But we eventually moved on to other things. And with investments, you need to accept that you make mistakes. And so in 2014, if I remember correctly, African Bank went through a very terrible time. And we thought, why don't we punt? And we decided to put a lot of the proceeds of that Safaricom into African Bank. And we know that in, you know, sort of late 2014, African Bank ultimately went to the wall. And so I'm sure most of the youngsters know a gentleman called Ray Dalio. There's another interesting quote of his where he said that he who lives by the crystal ball will eat shattered glass. And we made some predictions about African Bank at the time. And unfortunately, we ate shattered African Bank glass at the time. But, you know, such as, you know, lessons that you learn in investments, that you need to make cogent and logical decisions and stay away from the emotive things.
Yeah, and normally ask this question last, but I would assume that would be the worst investment you have ever made.
That is indeed the worst investment, Rick, that one made. And looking back, we hear this a lot about the impact of behavioral finance or emotions on one's investment decisions. And that's a real investment lesson to be learned, that I think in hindsight, clearly that was quite an emotive decision that we had made, rather than want to look deeply around, you know, how bad the bad debts of that businesses were and those things. And so that's one lesson that I think I always talk about.
Behavioral finance is a very interesting field, but how do you approach investment decisions? Because sometimes you would expect markets to move in a certain way. For example, we will see interest rate cuts in the US in September, or that is, I think 90% of analysts believe that we will see a cut in September. And in theory, the US markets should rise. But the theory and practice, they are sometimes removed because the interest rate cut could have been already priced in. So then it's not as intuitive as it seems at the moment. So how do you approach that?
Yeah. And so I think coming back to this quote I made around crystal ball gazing, there's a lot that has happened in the last 3 years in markets that was unexpected. And many things will continue to happen that are unexpected. We've seen that a lot of countries are going to elections. That brings about unexpected outcomes. From my perspective is, what can you do today that is going to assist you that clearly in an uncertain future? And that's to diversify. So my philosophy on investing is diversification. Find uncorrelated investments. And again, I mean, as I said, working for a business such as Alex Forbes Investments, that is at the mantra, at the heart of what we do as a business. And so, you know, I go back to the back end of 2017, where we as a country sort of hit a point where real returns had disappeared. We had to think, what area of investments should we be thinking about that is going to assist us in clearly this uncertain, volatile environment? And alternative investments was an area of focus of ours. We formalized investments into private markets and hedge funds. We did not know, in fact, what was going to turn out. We just knew that the future was uncertain. And in hindsight, looking at it, I think that form of diversification, has actually really meaningfully added to client portfolios. So no combination of equity, bonds, and cash over the last 3, 5, and 7 years would have given you inflation plus 5, as an example, which is, something as pension funds typically is the target. But hedge funds have typically given you that over that period. And so for me, philosophically, I believe in diversification.
Yeah, diversification, I think that is a very sound strategy, and most professional investors would support it. Hedge funds, it's an interesting segment of the investment world. And I think it's growing in popularity because there is a perception that they are very, very risky. And then many of these hedge funds are structured to reduce risk significantly. And there are many different of these funds available. If you're a young investor, how would you approach these funds?
I think education is very important. And I guess the part of the market is classified in just this one name, but the way that they function, the types of investments in hedge funds, they're very different. Others are equity oriented, others are fixed income oriented, others are combination, they're called multi-strat. And so first and foremost is educate yourself in understanding the features of hedge funds, what typically they're intending to do, in what environment do they do well in, and what makes sense for you as an investor. And so if you have a longer term view of the money that you want to save, right, perhaps then you would consider something that is slightly sort of more elevated in terms of risk return profile. And so maybe a long short equity solution versus one where you think that you are more conservative in how you invest, you'd probably look at a multi-strat solution. And so point number one that I always talk about is educate yourself. There are clearly barriers to entry in terms of regulation and the amount that you can invest and the likes and so, but there are platforms that now allow it as a retail investor. But, I was always taught there's investing versus there's saving. Never invest something that you're intending to save. And when you invest, be willing to lose your whole investment. And so those are the two differences, So saving is clearly for something that you want to look after and let it grow reasonably versus investing where you're willing to take some kind of investment risk. And so you need to be careful about what your intention is as an investor. If you're trying to save for an education versus to grow capital, those two things lead you to very different kind of investments. But on the hedge fund side, it is definitely a growing part of the market, but education is very important in that space, Eric.
Yeah, interesting perspective on saving versus investing. Just tell us about your personal investment portfolio. You've said a few times that you believe in diversification. So how do you approach that within your personal portfolio?
In my personal portfolio, I have investments locally here. If you look at what's happened in South Africa over the last 7 years, there's been a lot of negative sentiment about the country on many fronts, whether it is low growth, the political disposition, and all those things. And in that environment, when there's negative sentiment, investments typically end up being cheaper, or assets are cheaper. And so I have long taken a view that, having, investments into what they call SA Inc. was important. So businesses that are typically SA oriented, because there's a quote that says the value that you make from an investment is what you pay for it and not what you sell it for. And so, there's been lots of investments that have been cheaper. And so I've using my company products and even what you see on other platforms, combination of active and passive. And so I've got exposure locally. Globally, we've seen from a diversification perspective, there's been lots of talk about cryptocurrencies. And so I've got exposure of Bitcoin through an investment there. But again, I always value investing through the intellect of others. And so instead of taking the Bitcoin exposure directly myself, I've gone through a business. It's called Sun Money Capital. That's run by a gentleman called Robert Price. But that is a diversifier. And many say that, look, to understand how blockchain work, it's complicated, but he understands that. And so let me rather invest behind, somebody who understands it. So at the heart of who I am, I prefer to buy things cheap and sell them high.
Don't all of we?
It doesn't always play out that way. In my experience, I haven't always seen it play out that way. It sounds logical, doesn't it, Rick?
Absolutely.
You know, would I be a buyer of NVIDIA? I've seen people buying NVIDIA today. China has been hard hit, you've seen. And so I've been a buyer of China of late. And so a good combination of SA, a nice combination of offshore, Bitcoin and the likes. And so I can't tell you what things are going to be like tomorrow, but I can tell you that I've got enough exposure such that if certain things happen, you know, I have exposure there.
Alternative investments in your personal portfolio, do you stick to the Alex Forbes products, or are there some interesting things also in the portfolio?
Again, I have a bias here, maybe because I sit inside the organization. I've been in the organization now for more than 13 years. And I do believe that in some areas of investments, you probably need to be behind other investment professionals. You normally use a great example in that when we do diligence, an asset manager on the listed side, it's anywhere between 2 to 3 hours. And by then, you have a good sense of the strategy, whether you think it can outperform or not. On the private market side, it typically takes 2 to 3 days. And it has a lot to do with the asymmetry of information, Rick. You need to corroborate much more. You need to spend a bit more time trying to understand, you know, when the person says that you analyze the deals that they're in. You need to analyze whether they're good at making investment decisions, but you also need to analyze how they're going to exit the deal. And so I believe that when it comes to alternative investments, you'd rather go behind somebody who does it, who has a track record, does it for a living. And so my exposure to private markets, as an example, is definitely through sort of company solutions, largely because I can see that there's acumen there. And by the way, we haven't talked about fees. So in that part of the market, it's generally more expensive.
A lot more expensive.
You typically would want to be behind somebody who can negotiate on your behalf, right? To try and actually minimize the cost on your behalf. And so, and I'm not saying others haven't been successful to go direct, but I think I've seen the value of going through an organization that does it on your behalf.
Just lastly, it's interesting the perspectives of professional investors differ. Sometimes they differ significantly. You know, I've had so many, you know, of your peers on this show, and some of them focus on unit trust investments. Others really focus, if you're young, go directly into shares. And here you throw alternative investments in the mix as well. I think it just shows you that there isn't a silver bullet in this industry. You need to be sober in your thinking. You need to be strategic. And, you know, once you've picked an approach, stick to it. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that. It's not about timing the markets. It's about time in the markets. That's what we always speak to our clients about, in that time favors those who have it. And so the longer you stay invested, the better the outcomes. As I said, the only protection that you typically get is to try and diversify your investments, no matter how well you understand a single investment. But, you know, no one investment does well in all market environments. And so think about diversifying it. But time is really the biggest contributor to how you create value.
Lebo, thank you so much for your time. That was Lebo Tobisi. He is the Deputy Chief Investment Officer for Alternative Investments at Alex Forbes Investments.
Show me the money.
That was The Money Web, the A Better Investor podcast with Rake Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the Money Web podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.